Welcome back to the second hour of Guitar Tracks. I'm your host, Brian Tarquin. Now, a great interview with Travis Stever. He's the guitarist from Coheed and Cambria, that metal progressive band. And I met him through a mutual friend of mine, a dear friend, Jeff Gray, who's an engineer. So Travis told me his beginnings and how he got into guitar.
I grew up around vinyl that would sit in the cases or the cabinet that I would pull out and stare at, like the first Sabbath album, and just stare at that lady. And I would share like numerous other records, and the art is what captured me as a kid to actually throw those things on. I was sucked in by the art of these records early on. And even the Zeppelin II record with all the guys on the front, still had a turntable at that point, and I'm talking 4 or 5 years old. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, eventually I started to dig into those vinyl and hear much heavier music. And I could relate it to some of the stuff my dad had done, because he did some heavy rock, Dee Snyder's and Twisted Sister. So, and of course the radio, you know, and just fast forward a little bit to having stepbrothers were into like punk and hardcore and stuff. And there was that separation when we were kids, you know, well, if you like heavy metal, you can't like punk rock, hardcore, you know. Remember, there was like more of a separation. Yeah, I remember one of the first records I bought myself was Somewhere in Time by Iron Maiden. I loved the cover. It was all about cover, you know. I must have been 7 or 8 years old. I took it home, and my stepbrother was just like, you know, a bunch of kids did a seance with that album on them. It burned the house down because it's Satan, you know. And I was like, oh, no. And I was always listening to it. I was like, I like this. I'm away from metal for a little while. It's like, now, see, this is the stuff that is hardcore music and stuff. And then he continued to get into, like, Operation Ivy, and which, you know, eventually was Rancid, and all these different bands that he would turn me on to. But I still drifted back with metal. And classic rock I really drifted into, because I went from loving, like, a lot of the metal from that era and saying, well, this is the stuff that a lot of them are influenced by. You know, like the classic rock and roll. And even though my father had played a lot of music like that, and I was around a lot of singer-songwriters, I found Neil Young on my own, first by getting the Decade album from my uncle's record collection. And after I got that record, I started to buy all of his records. Neil Young became my favorite singer, guitar player. My favorite records when I was 12 years old was The Cure's Disintegration and Neil Young Harvest. There's a song that Neil Young had called Words Between the Lines of Age, and I had that song and Fascination Street, and I just specifically remember that. I mean, what about the guitar sounds in those songs? It really was. I was a huge Led Zeppelin fan, and like I said, I would watch the song I'm in the same over and over again. I had Zeppelin posters all over the place. It's so useful, you know. I could tell you about how much I loved Zeppelin, but there's a lot of people that did. There's people that hated them, too. I absolutely love them, and yeah, Jimmy Page was one of my favorite guitar players. So about 12 or 13, I mean, there were so many things that I got into after that that shaped me in playing music, not even just guitar, in what I wanted to listen to. I kind of pride myself as not even the diverse player, but a diverse listener. I like being able to work with people and listen to what they're doing and give my honest opinion, and sometimes I feel like it's worth something, you know, like one of the qualities I think I have. And when somebody asks me about something, I'll be like, okay, I'll be honest with what I hear, you know. And I'd like to think that that helps me with playing. That's where the guitar and all that influence came from. And, you know, I went into countless other things, you know, loving bands like Faith No More. And Leonard Cohen was always one of my favorite songwriters. And I got that from my father and actually my uncle. I saw Leonard Cohen 3 times before he passed away. So I feel very lucky I got to see him. You know, when I was 9, my dad took me to an Eric Burton show, and he was so hammered on stage, he almost fell off. So I clearly had been to shows. I had never been to big concerts, you know. Nobody ever really took me to any big concerts. And one of the first big concerts, and still the best that I've ever been, was Neil Young with Booker T and the MGs, and Soundgarden and Blind Melon. And it was a fantastic show, and it was probably 14. You know, the influences that were there, like, did I like Blind Melon very much at that point? No, not yet. But they had an album called Soup that came out in the mid-90s, and I still think it's one of the most underrated, incredible rock records that anybody I ever tell to listen to it comes back and says, wow, I had no idea that that band, you know, went that direction and had that much diversity. But, I mean, when it comes down to it, I also drifted towards a lot of, like, hardcore kind of stuff, and then would go right back to wanting to listen to Willie Nelson or Chris Christopherson. You know, I grew up with that, too. My father went through and even recorded some of it with David, but he went through, like, country, you know, time period where a lot of it was country music and stuff, and so that was in my ears all the time. And I love experimenting with writing that kind of music as well. I had another project called Davenport Cabinet, and that was a little bit more singer-songwriter oriented. I released some stuff under that, and it's on Spotify. It's all over the map for me. It really is. I never really got into jazz and, you know, any jazz fusion or anything like that, and I've become more open to it. You know what I mean? Like, I just never really was in my world, and I know that I heard some of it. You're an incredible player in that world, too. Yeah, really. I mean, it's like, and listening to some of that stuff, I'm like, you know, you start to acquire new tastes as you get older. And that's the thing with Tony, too, is everybody's got numerous different influences. Our drummer has an incredible hip-hop project called Weird Science, and he's been doing that for years. And, you know, everybody's got different things, so I feel lucky to be part of a band that has so much diversity.
It's so great to see a guitarist open to so many different influences. So many cats get involved with one style of music and stuck in that, and they never leave it. Now he tells me how Coheed and Cambria started, actually in Nyack, New York.
As far as what Coheed began, it began up there very young, playing with different band members, and like I said, back to the incestuous, you know, you play drums here. So that all started in my friend's basement here in Rockland for us. It was like, oh, today you're the drummer, and now I'll try bass. And then everybody kind of found that they wanted to master the certain instruments that they had. I mean, I haven't been able to let the others alone. You know, I'm playing bass and drums on everything I can show in life, but, you know, like, guitar became the thing that I was the most in love with. Eventually, there was a three-piece band upstate. I mean, my personal involvement became that Claudio had asked me to join the band with him, and at that point, there were a band called Shibuti, and I joined, and it was at the tail end of it being that band, and we had a drummer that played for that band and a bass player, Mike Todd, and we played as a four-piece with that lineup, and eventually that drummer had left the band, and we kind of started to change right before that anyway, and Josh, our original drummer, who's been back in the band for about 7 years now, who I'm talking about, who was Hip Hop Project owner, he basically joined the band, and we became Coheed and Cambria at that point, and, you know, we went through a few different names. We went on and started to experiment with different names, and Claudio had a side project called Coheed and Cambria, where it had a concept that went with it. We're trying to figure out the perfect name, and we couldn't find a good name, you know, like nothing seemed to work. Basically, we were, you know, he had mentioned it, but he was like, I get it if we're not going to use that. And we all discussed it, and we were like, yeah, we do like that name, you know, and it's kind of cool to see what happens with this concept. Basically, also, I will be honest, I kind of was like, well, the concept doesn't have to be involved. And he already had it in his mind that if I'm going to use this name, I'm using this concept. So you fast forward to the early days of the band, and it would just be like, why's the story got to be involved? And I'll be honest, Brian, I look back at that young man and sometimes would be like, come on. And now I think, well, we're lucky that that was involved because it separated us. And even though people would be like, what a bunch of dorks with their science fiction, you know, they still were talking about us.
Hey, man, Travis, you're absolutely right. If they don't talk about you, they're not interested. So no matter what your angle is on the music, it's great to be recognized. Now he goes on to tell me what kind of gear he uses both in the studio and live with Coheed and Cambria.
I use an ES-350 tobacco burst. I also have a 99 Les Paul Standard that I use with a Bixby on it. And then I have a gold top Les Paul that I use. And I have an SG I believe it's a 2002 that I usually, we do a song that I tune down the low E to a P. So I have that. So I have the string. Their low B tuning is always ready so that it doesn't sound funky tuning it down on stage right there. And then we use Axoflex fractal units, basically with a cabinet, a Mesa cabinet on stage. For studio, I tend to use the gold top Les Paul with Bixby for everything I do. So traditional, I believe it was 2010 Les Paul. When we're playing live, it's just using the Axoflex fractal. So basically recreating everything you recorded. When we're in the studio, we use all different pedals and amp heads. And, you know, I use my Mark V a lot, but, you know, we'll have everything on hand. Marshalls, Bogner, you know, the Ubershaw.
That's it, man. You've got to have everything up on deck when you're in the studio because there's no restrictions. And the worst thing to have is get an idea and a feeling and not have the right instrument to record it. Now he tells me about the new tour that Coheed and Cambria are about to embark on.
I think that we will probably, hopefully, be in the studio someday soon, but we have big tours coming up. We have a big tour for the album No World for Tomorrow, which is our fourth record. So we'll be doing an entirety all of May, and that's going to be all West Coast into the Midwest, and then basically do that half of the States, and then in September do the other half of the States. We got a couple of festivals in between. And as far as projects are concerned, you know, I did release a kind of funny, well, I shouldn't say I released it, I guess my alter ego called The Fire Deuce that had a bunch of different musicians. I'm not sure if you know who Richard Christie is in the Howard Stern Show. He also was a drummer who played with the band Death. And yeah, so Richard Christie played drums on a bunch of songs. Josh, our drummer, played drums on songs. There's just a bunch of different musicians. That's called Fire Deuce, and I released that on Spotify and stuff. I released that about a month ago, maybe a month and a half ago. And then I had a project I told you about before for years called Davenport Cabinet, which is very different than that. You know, but that ended a while ago. I haven't been doing anything with that. So really, I'm just prepared for when Coheed works on new stuff and doing this tour and been working in this studio that we got with countless different musicians and just trying to see what happens with it, you know? I feel lucky that I was able to play on your record. And I did want to add that to come join us, specifically you, but if anybody is listening to this and they want to come join us to see the tour coming, which is a record that everybody should check out anyway. Taylor Hawkins from the Foo Fighters played on it.
It sounds like he's got some great guests on the new album. And it was really great talking to Travis, and he was a guest on my new album called Brothers in Arms. So now I'm going to play you the track, No World for Tomorrow, Coheed and Cambria.
Believe me.
From Coheed and Cambria, and you're listening to Guitar Track, the best music on the Florida coast.
Yeah, there's a bad wind blowing through there. You better pull up your shorts.
That's Lights of Las Vegas featuring Ron Bumblefoot-Thal, myself, and Phil Gnaro on vocals from my new album, Vegas Blue. Before that was Gravemakers and Gunslingers by Coheed and Cambria.